You resigned as chancellor in 2021. Then what did you do?
I kind of looked at my career. My two passions had been education and public service, and felt like I'd had a great opportunity in both arenas as member of legislature, legislative leader, speaker, teaching at the law school at OU, being a university president, certainly being system head and chancellor. I was really going to just look at retirement. I had, shortly after I retired, the Chickasaw Nation contacted me and wanted to create a situation where I would work with them on various projects, some education related and otherwise. So I did that. Then, within a month or two, I think our mutual friend Cliff Hudson called me. And Cliff, when he was chair and CEO of Sonic and sold Sonic to Arby's, Cliff became of counsel with Crow Dunleavy Law Firm, the oldest firm in the state. And Cliff indicated, he said, I think they would like to talk to you. And I said, you know, Cliff, I mean, I practice law. I'm not. And he said, well, I kind of had the same feeling, but I think you should come down and talk with him. Well, long and short, had two or three meetings, of which Cliff was involved in, and made the decision to go with Crow Dunleavy as a director in December of 2022. So that's now been 3 years and 3 months. I've really enjoyed it. We have 38 practice groups, every area from aviation to real estate to energy to healthcare to environment, litigation, governmental relations and regulatory. I chair governmental relations and regulatory, and have really enjoyed that experience. I mean, it's one that I candidly didn't know whether or not at this stage that would fit again, but it has. So between serving as a director with Crow Dunleavy, the work with the Chickasaw Nation, which I thoroughly enjoy, I'm still on a lot of boards. I'm on the Oklahoma Hall of Fame board, Oklahoma Educational Television Foundation, Epworth Villa, a continuum of care group in Edmond. I'm very proud to serve on that board. I'm on the Higher Ed Heritage Society Hall of Fame board. I'm on the Massey Family Foundation board in Durant, and a number of others that I enjoy that service, and I think that service is important. So as far as am I enjoying life? I definitely am. Melinda tells me I get an F in retirement, but at some point I may move to a little more, but I don't know when I will.
I don't think you could.
Okay. I think you're probably right.
When you look back on your career, what accomplishments jump out at you as maybe you're the most proud of?
Let me start with my law practice in Okemah. I always enjoyed, you know, smaller community, but whether it's preparing a will or representing a couple on a matter where they feel like they may not have been treated fairly, I always really enjoyed. I received a lot of satisfaction from that. I enjoyed my school board experience tremendously. In the legislature, I don't want to belabor House Bill 1017, but that was a threshold issue for me, and I felt very strongly about it. I had other bills, John. I authored, at the request of Robert Henry when he was Attorney General, the Drug-Free School Zone Bill, which indicated there were parameters of which where the school zone could not be invaded for any reason. Authored in the mid-90s with Senator Ted Fisher and Senator Bob Cullison and my colleague Don McCorkle. The Quality Jobs Bill, which you look back, it's still working 30 years later. If the company can demonstrate that what they plan to do in way of expansion will generate these additional jobs, then we provide incentives that allow them to do that. But the jobs, the revenue generated by the job far exceeds what the state incentive was. And that model has worked with really just few modifications very well 30 years later. You know, we had to navigate the difficult terrain with the downturn in the oil industry. a lot of economic recovery measures, changes in the healthcare system with coming up with a workable medical provider fee and things like that. Some of them not high profile, but important in terms of, I look back on my time as speaker, some of the reforms that we initiated that I felt strongly about. I always was concerned about our image, and when we would have the all-night sessions in my early years in the legislature, there'd always be somebody at 3 a.m. that would close their eyes and a picture would be taken. And so when I became speaker, we just said there would be, and I worked with Steve Lewis on a number of these, no more all-night sessions. If you brought retirement bills out for a vote, you had to have an actuarial study on the member's desk a week ahead of time. A bill had to lay over 24 hours before you could vote on it after it came out of committee, where there wasn't a surprise element rushing it all the way through in a matter of hours. One of the issues I was very proud of was proportionate representation on legislative committees in the House. When I became Speaker, Appropriations example, I had 30 members. In those days, the Democrats were the majority party, but the Republicans had a third of the House, but only 3 members on Appropriations. Arguably, if you're going to do the percentage, it ought to be 10, and I did that. There was some consternation initially, but it subsided, and it seemed to me, you know, things like that were just the fair thing to do, the right thing to do, appointing Republicans to some leadership positions or the minority party, things like that that I just look back on. I think it's probably always, if you can strive to be fair. When I was in the legislature, through the work of a number of individuals, including Senator Maxine Horner from Tulsa, we passed the Oklahoma's Promise Scholarship Program for students. It provided if your parents met the income levels, if you made your grades, if you presented no disciplinary problems, you met the criteria in terms of the courses that needed to be taken for college admission. If you accomplished all those things and met that criteria, the state would provide you with a scholarship that paid your tuition, not fees, not any of the other expenses, but tuition. And at this point, I'm proud of the fact I administered that program for nearly 15 years as chancellor of the state higher education system, a program I had a hand in passing in the legislature back in 1992 and 1993. The program has provided scholarships for over 100,000 students in Oklahoma at this point. So I think it has stood the test of time. More, maybe as importantly or even more importantly, it has provided in many ways that bridge or lifeline to students who, without this scholarship, they likely could not have been able to attend college and graduate from college. So it's been a very, very significant program.
And let me just add,
okay,
because I've interviewed Maxine Horner for Voices of Oklahoma, and she said some of those students actually came back to serve in the legislature.
Yeah, absolutely. I think of right now, one serving right now, the minority leader in the House, Representative Cindy Munson from Lawton, was a very proud recipient of the Oklahoma Scholars program, many others. And you look at, we've done profiles not only in public service, but in many fields. They've gone on to earn degrees in the medical field, in the legal arena, certainly. It spans the, you know, from architecture to journalism. They have exceeded really in numerous areas. So the scholarship has been transformational, and certainly I'm very proud of that. Another program I was proud of, going back again to my time as Speaker of the House, we had a bond issue for higher education in 1993, and we thought it would be important. The digital age was emerging. It was still in its infancy in 1993, but several of us in the legislature, Governor Walters, thought that we needed to begin a process of, particularly in higher education, having a plan that began to involve us in the digital age, where we were not a bystander but a participant. A result of that was an initial amount of $14 million that was put into the bond issue in 1993 that became the linchpin and the beginning of the OneNet telecommunications system administered by the state regents. So as chancellor, I administered that program for 15 years. It provides a connection and telecommunication network for all of our college and universities, for many of our K through 12 schools, for career tech, for hospitals, for libraries, and has been a vital communication link in the digital age. Again, we, in 1993, I don't pretend to say we knew what it would be here 33 years later. I do say that we felt it was an area and an initiative, much like AI today, that we felt like if we didn't get out and attempt to get in front of it, we would be reacting and not having a plan that was a forward-thinking plan. So very, very pleased about that. I want to comment as far as accomplishments, John, just on funding for higher education during my time. During my 15 years, we had years where we had increases in the budget. We had years where we had reductions. My job as chancellor, one of the jobs is to be the primary or chief spokesperson for the system. So I had the responsibility to advocate for the needs of higher education, which is a constitutional responsibility. It provides in our state constitution that the state regents and, by extension, the chancellor must present and advocate for the specific needs of our state's higher education system. And I took that responsibility very seriously, not only when we were able to allocate funds when we had increases to targeted programs, to programs we felt could move the needle on more college degrees, addressing the job needs of our businesses in this state and the right priorities, providing for more teachers and more doctors in areas, and more engineers in areas where we had a need in those areas. So all of those things I felt was very important. And I think it was just as important, John, as we had additional money where we could allocate that money to priorities in the years where there were reductions, to very strategically look at that as well, where we understood that there needed to be flexibility. There certainly needed to be understanding as we structured a budget, but as you made those reductions, we didn't always make those across the board in an effort to preserve the quality of the academic product at our college and universities for our students. And I think I would just say in summation, as I look at programs like the Adult Degree Completion Initiative that I had a large hand in as chancellor, where we encouraged adults to come back and complete their degree. They may have stopped out for a variety of reasons. All of those, one, put students first. Two, I think we're geared towards our overall goal of producing more college graduates. We know the states that have a higher percentage of their citizens with college degrees to a state are the states that have higher per capita incomes and more diversified economies. And that's where we wanted to be. It's where we continue to want to be and will be in the state of Oklahoma. And I tried to look at the things that we did as an effort to move us forward with those objectives, a quality academic product at an affordable cost, and initiatives that met the job needs and the academic needs, not only of our college and universities, but ultimately of our students and the citizens in this state.
Yeah. Okay. Then we come to the final question. How would you like to be remembered?
Well, okay, that is a threshold question. I hope I'm remembered as someone that kept his word, someone whose word was his bond. I hope I'm remembered as someone who did not move with the winds of the day, the political and otherwise. I think I may have mentioned earlier in this interview, my father told me at an early age, it's okay to go against the crowd and go against the grain if you strongly believe that what you're doing is the right thing to do. And I've tried to stay with that. That served me pretty well. So I look on it, if you, at the end of your life, if you're able to say that you've got a significant number of friends that have been with you from the beginning through the good times and the hard times, of which we know there'll be both, if you have a solid family relationship, a belief and a faith that is equally solid, if you're able to engage in matters, not necessarily as an elected official. You can be involved in important things without, and I found this out since I've left elective office, without being an elected official. In fact, in many ways, you can impact the outcome, in some instances, even more. So I hope when whoever would do so would look back on my career, they would say, I kept my word. I tried to always work towards achieving a good result and a right result, and that I understood that in doing that, you don't have to compromise your principles, but that when the day is over, I would hope they'd say that I embraced initiatives that have moved our state forward and certainly in that context helped our country. Because when it's all said and done, you want to look back and feel like you've had a impact on making things better. I hope when it's all said and done that others would say that I did.
Well, as we've reviewed your career, you certainly have made Oklahoma a better state. So, Glenn, thank you for your time contributing this to Voices of Oklahoma. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
My pleasure to be with you, John.